Welcome, everybody, to the March 24th regular board meeting, Marysville of Education. Appreciate the fact that there's so many people here. Sorry about the chairs. We seem to always run out when we have this big a crowd here. And at this point, we've been in session, started session at 5:45 and went immediately to executive session. We're back from that. And so we will start with the Pledge of Allegiance at this time. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. And with that, I entertain a motion to adopt the agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Been properly moved and seconded that we adopt the agenda as published. Can we have a roll call on that?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Yes. And with that, I need a motion to recognize the student state qualifiers and with their special recognitions. No motion needed for that. So we'll go right into that. And it looks like you're up, Jonathan.
So if members of the board would kind of come down to the front stairs, tonight we, not all of them are here, but we have nearly 300 students who have reached state level recognition. So a couple of times a year we honor those, and so tonight it's great privilege to recognize academic and athletic success of those students.
Thanks, Diane. We're going to ask the members of the Monarchs Marching Band to come on over here by Mr. Fannin.
I would say you guys are busy packing and loading up, right? And taking off early for, so we appreciate you being here too, making time for us.
Yeah. Thank you for having us and thank you for the recognition. These members that are behind me filling up the corner of the room, and this is not even close to a half. This is maybe a quarter of the marching band. These members work very hard on a daily basis. Starting before school even lets out, we're already working on next year's halftime show. These kids dedicate a lot of time and put in a lot of time to putting a great quality, a good sounding, a good looking show on the field. This year we went to three competitions and we received superior ratings at all three competitions. Got superior ratings in every category in two out of the three competitions. And then for our state competition, we got a superior rating as well, and got superior rating in all of our categories as well at the state competition. So that comes with a lot of work that has been put in, and I can't thank these students enough for all the dedication that they put into the band, from seniors all the way to freshmen. It's been a fabulous year, and they make it such a blessing and a joy to work here with the school district and with the high school band. So with that being said, thank you, everybody. I appreciate all your hard work this year. Congratulations.
And have a great time in Florida.
All right, I guess I can go ahead and begin. My name is Ken Chafin, and I have the privilege to serve as principal at Marysville High School. Thank you to the board and to Diane Allen for having us here tonight, and thank you to all the parents for all the ways that you support us and all of our groups. First one we're going to recognize, or the next one I should say, is DECA. And DECA is one of our groups at Marysville High School that we're really proud of. This year we have the largest group of state qualifiers in our school history for the state competition, with 64 total represented in all event categories. Something unique, 28 students of them have made the finals, or made the finals, which is almost half of our students. 26 students are now going to go on to compete in California, and I want to go on record right now, I'll volunteer to be a chaperone for that. But this is a great opportunity for them to continue to grow their leadership skills and grow as entrepreneurs. So now I'd like to welcome up Bailey Himmelgarn, who is our amazing advisor.
Thank you. Year after year, these kiddos keep impressing me, and this year is obviously no different. The way that they have grouped together to be able to help each other succeed, and then when they do succeed, to see how they are so proud of each other, truly makes them who they are today and why we're having the success that we are having. So I'm just really proud of them. And you guys can go ahead and stand up and come on up for your picture.
Good evening, I'm Lisa Nemeth. I'm the assistant principal at the Early College High School. And this year tonight, we're so excited to give accolades to three different groups of students. So we'll start with our BPA students. If you're a BPA student this year. Well, it doesn't look like there are many students here from the BPA competition, but that's one of our CTSOs, or Career Tech Student Organizations, that we have. This year we had the most involvement we've ever had, and we had three groups of people who were mere points away from qualifying actually for nationals. So we're hopeful that next year maybe we can move into a national qualifier as well. So we are really proud of our students from the BPA organization, so we should give them another round of applause. Another CTSO that we have is for our health science students. It's called HOSA. So if any of our HOSA students, oh yes, woo-hoo. Very good. All right. Come on over, guys. A-
as with BPA, this is the largest group we've ever had go to compete for state at their state competition. These students have to do all kinds of different sorts of clinical work, or they might just be taking a written exam. They might have to get up in front of people and speak. It's just a myriad of different things that they have to be responsible for, and they each take ownership, and we're just so very proud of them. So to our host of students. Yeah. Yeah. All right, and the final group that we'd like to recognize are three students who participated in the OSLN, which stands for Ohio STEM Learning Network, Design Challenge this year. So Ethan, Michael, and Tyler are our three students. Are they here? I see. All right, Ethan, on behalf of everyone.
Yeah, come on over.
This year, we decided as a school to really invest in the OSLN Design Challenge, which involved rockets and space and Star Lab, which is happening at Ohio State. How many? 80? Yeah. There were approximately 80 kids who worked together in small groups to attend to this design challenge to make life better in space. They had to learn about what it's like to be an astronaut. They Zoomed with a real, true astronaut. They Zoomed with people from Ohio State who are building the Star Lab. And we were only allowed to send one group to the state to be sort of judged against all the other schools that sent people. I saw every presentation, and from 9th grade to 12th grade, we could have sent any group, and I think we would have won. But we sent Michael and Ethan and Tyler's presentation, and they actually received the statewide first place as well. That was sort of a surprise. None of us knew that day. And so we are just so immensely proud, and just the opportunities that going through something like the STEM network will provide for these kids and the connections they were able to make that day, we hope it rockets them into their future. I just got that. But we're so proud. So congratulations, Ethan.
Okay, we're now going to talk about two students who competed at the Ohio Japanese Bowl. And so I'm not sure where Marissa and Amelia are at, or if they're here even, but they just competed at the Ohio Japan Bowl, which if you've never been, it's completely fascinating. The level of knowledge and understanding they have about the spoken Japanese language and the way that they compete against other schools is really remarkable. And our group finished second this year in the state, and really brought a lot of knowledge to the table and represented Marysville very, very well. So let's give them a nice round of applause. Okay, we're gonna move on to our FFA program, and as you know, it's one of the really, what I consider an elite program here in Marysville Schools, something that brings a lot of pride and energy to our community. And I can tell you, as many of the accomplishments as they've had, I've never probably been more proud as a principal and a community member than to see them Sunday, about 60 students in total, and then also alumni that made it out to the Trap Farm on Patrick Brush Run Road and helped clean up damage from the tornado that just recently hit one of our very long-standing FFA member families. And they showed up and worked really hard. We pulled metal out of trees and did everything we could to clean up, and they were just incredible. But their contests are called Career Development Events, And tonight, we're going to recognize some state finalists and placers. And also, a nice little point of pride, in addition to being top 10 in the nation last year, we just found out that we're once again being recognized as top 10 in the state of Ohio. So let's give them a round of applause. And Sherry Anderson, their fearless leader, is going to come up and talk for a minute.
All right, good evening. I'll just kind of brag a little bit about each of them that happened to be here. We have several that weren't able to make it tonight. So I guess as I read your name as you guys go through. So Nathan Drum. So Nathan was a member of the Ag Sales team, qualified for state. They ended up placing 13th in the state this year. Brandon's not here. Savannah. Riley Karcher, she has three big things coming up for her. She earned her state degree, which she will be getting in May. She was rated as a gold level reporter, and then she was also a member of the state qualifying in a 10th place animal behavior team. Brody Kearns also has earned his state degree, and he also was rated as a gold level secretary and will earn that award later this year. Owen Morey, so he was a member of one of the State FFA Career Conversation CDEs. So Owen is an eighth grader, and that's a brand new CDE that we did this year. So, and they did an excellent job. Abby Pratt, so Abby was also a member of the state qualifying ag sales team where they placed 13th. Wesley Thompson was a member of the agricultural impact on agriculture team, also an eighth grader that competed at the state level. Cooper Woodson, Cooper was a member of the animal behavior team that placed 10th in the state as well. And Kenzie Karcher, she was a member of the Career Quiz Bowl, I believe that placed 5th in the state this year, also an 8th grader, so a brand new contest for us. So congratulations to all the students.
Good evening. Coach Sundermeyer here for the girls' cross-country team. We want to thank administration for inviting us tonight. You know, we were just jogging around the parking lot, kind of cooling down from our hill workout this afternoon. And I was thinking, as a lot of coaches do, about our next competition and training cycle and our immediate goals. And I thought about tonight as a chance to kind of take a step back and reflect on a body of work that these athletes have done and accomplished. They won the OCC by 2 points. They were repeat district champions by 5 points. They finished third in the toughest region in the state of Ohio and qualified for the second year in a row for the Division I state championships. They take a lot of pride in representing each other and our community. We want to congratulate them tonight. Great job.
Thank you.
It's still me. Coach Sundermeyer here, now wearing the track and field cap. We're going to recognize our indoor state qualifiers for the track and field competition from a few weeks ago. Indoor track and field to us is a preparation season to get us ready for the spring, for the outdoor season. And we've taken a lot of pride in the work that we've done over the winter as kind of this unofficial in-between time to seek competitive opportunities. We know it's tough competing in Division I, especially here in Central Ohio. This year, we had a large group representing a lot of different events, from field events to sprinting events to long-distance events, that made the trip up to Geneva to the Spire Institute to compete against the best of the best. We want to offer our congratulations to them tonight and thank the board again for recognizing us. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Coach Michael Wan. I am the coach of the Marysville swim and dive team, both boys and the girls. We had a state qualifier this past year in Sophia Stam. She is unable to be here today, but I just want to talk a few things about her. This is her second year with us. She was over in another school before she got here, and in those two previous years, she was a state qualifier. She came to us last year as a transfer as well. Became a state qualifier. She also came in second. And then again this past year, she became a four-time state qualifier again and finished 13th this past year to represent Marysville Swim and Dive. Really greatly appreciate everything she does. We don't have diving boards at our pool, and many of the pools in Central Ohio don't, but when we get to see her, it is great pleasure. And she's a really great diver. We celebrate her moving on to University of Akron next year. Thank you.
Well, good evening. My name's Brent Johnson. I'm a head football coach. I'd like to thank our administration and board for having us sitting back there. The beauty of being towards the end is you get to hear everybody. You don't check out, and a lot of good things happening here, and that's pretty cool. I think it's probably the same for football as any other program or academic. It takes a lot of hard work, commitment, and it's always a choice by the kids whether they're gonna do that or not, and the people standing in this room, along with Nick and Nate Potter, this is Nick Johnson, and Nate Potter, they earned All Ohio for football. And they were both all conference, all district. We had five kids all district, and then these two were selected to the All Ohio team, which is football is kind of a big deal in Ohio, and we're proud of that. So congratulations to everybody. Congratulations to Nick and Nate. Nate could not make it tonight, but we thank you for having us.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Joey Day. I'm the Director of Athletics for Marysville High School, and I get the privilege tonight to speak on behalf of JoJo Eberhardt and our girls' soccer program. As coaches and leaders within our department, we talk a lot about the times where we get spoiled by athletes that have such a tremendous reach and impact in our programs. And I would say that JoJo is a very prime example of that. You know, we're going to talk about soccer right now, but she's had such a lasting impact in the sports that she's been a part of. Earning eight letters at the Division I level is something that you don't see very often, and JoJo has done that. both in soccer and in basketball, being four-year lettermen for both of those. So that's something that is really special and unique. She's been all district and in all Ohio, obviously. She's getting the second all Ohio for tonight for soccer, but also in basketball as a three-time OCC player of the year, as well as all Ohio on that end. So, you know, something that we're gonna miss, having JoJo. You know, again, we get used to seeing, you know, the performances and things that she has accomplished, you know, both on the soccer field and on the basketball court. You know, really proud of you, Joe, and, you know, excited to see what you're gonna accomplish in the future. So congratulations to everybody on their accomplishments tonight, and specifically for Joe.
Thank you all for coming this evening. That concludes our recognitions of state accomplishments for this evening. Feel free to stay for the remainder of the board member, the board meeting, I apologize. But it's your choice whether you stay or not, and if not, have a great evening. Again, thank you all for coming tonight. If you are leaving, though, we're just going to continue with the business part of our meeting here very shortly. So thank you.
Mr. Keck, the next item on the agenda is the Employee of the Month. Do you want me to go ahead and read that, and then you guys can make motion when you come up to your seats? Okay. All right, this evening it's my pleasure for your consideration then, I guess, because it's not approved yet, to honor Chelsea Breeden as our Employee of the Month. Chelsea, if you're here, could you come forward? There you are. Come on up. It's my pleasure to read the comments made, Chelsea, by your peers on why you're being nominated for this award. So, and I think they'll take some pictures while I'm talking, if that's okay. Chelsea is the Edgewood team leader for SAC. She is always the first to volunteer a helping hand. She goes out of her way to provide help for not only her working site at Edgewood, but other sites as well. No matter what the day brings, Chelsea deals with it with a smile and an eagerness to find solutions. She has a heart of gold and wants the best for her group of kids. She cares so much for the SAC program and wants to see it thrive. She is the very definition of team player, and she inspires everyone on her team and more. She is such an amazing part of the SAC team. She is willing to help any coworker, family, or student at any time. even outside work hours. So kind, thoughtful, very talented, and often has ideas that help improve our operation. She is a valuable asset to SAC, and I am very thankful to have her on our team. Chelsea is the kindest human and sweetest soul. She loves her students like her own and takes pride in her job. It is easy to see how much passion she has for her students and her care. Thank you, Chelsea. Congratulations.
Yeah. And now I'd entertain a motion to accept Chelsea as our employee of the month.
So moved.
And I'll second.
Been properly moved and seconded. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Smith? Yes.
Yes. Okay. And we're now to public participation. Do we? There is none? Okay. Next one is presentation from Early College High School.
Okay, sorry about that, thank you. Good evening, I am Jen Hinder. I'm the principal at the Marysville STEM Early College High School. I'm so excited to be here and present to you. 10 years ago, we got the Straight A grant, and I was one of the teachers who was honored to be selected to help launch the school. We built the systems. We were so proud of the STEM high school. 2 years ago, I was lucky enough to come back. And we were in the process of state STEM redesignation at that time, and it has been my honor to lead that school through that process. So I am really grateful to the board to give me this chance to talk about the hard work of our staff and our students, to be honest, who've been a part of this process. So the fact is, we know we need STEM jobs. We need to train our kids for the future. And so we know that STEM jobs are growing at rates that are double of non-STEM jobs. We know that STEM workers have higher median pay, lower unemployment, and if you look at the projection of Ohio industries adding the most new jobs, they're almost all completely STEM. I'd make the argument that even the ones that aren't have STEM behind them. They have engineering, they have IT behind them, because almost everything we do has STEM in it. So when we're talking about why STEM matters, why this school matters, it's because we're raising up kids to think like scientists, like mathematicians, like engineers, for technologies that haven't even been invented yet. My brother's an electrical engineer. He's worked on airplane engines. He's worked to build and program machines for pharmacies. And honestly, right now, he's working on AI programming for to give loans to people without using credit scores. He wasn't trained for any of that when he went to OSU. He was trained on the job. He learned to think like an engineer, and that's what we're doing here at STEM. So right here is a map of all the current public STEM high schools in Ohio. So you'll see there's only 14. There's not a lot in our area. There's not a lot of those opportunities for kids. What we're providing really, truly is not available in many places. This redesignation process has been happening with all STEM schools in Ohio over the course of the last 3 years. And from the people I know who are involved, to be honest, many have lost their designation. 14 is lower than it was 2 years ago, that number. And of those, I know over half, to be honest, are being put on growth plans. It is a robust and rigorous process to become a STEM school in the state of Ohio. So what we're doing is important. We talk about STEM. You guys have all probably seen this. I presented this a million times, who we are. Those are the state categories: culture of learning, learning and teaching, pathways to success. There's our habits of mind and our design cycle. We talk about that a lot. And I always like to say what that really means is we care about who you are, We care about how you learn, and we care about where you're headed after high school. We're building that bridge between high school and your future career. So we look at that, and that looks nice and easy, but what that really means is pages and pages of this detailed rubric by the state of Ohio with incredible amounts of detailed requirements to be a STEM school. So when we took on this job in August of 2022, when I came to the building, you're gonna see that's kind of where we were in line. We had been a part of the pilot program with Ohio STEM Learning Network and Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. And they had come in, and to be very honest with you, the year before had said we weren't quite living up to what it meant to be STEM. So we did admin walkthroughs, we used their rubric, we went to the staff, we went to students, and you're gonna see at the end there the growth that we had. So we knew by April that we were getting there. We had the redesignation site visit, which is a full day visit from ODE, OSLN, STEM redesignation team members, often principals of other STEM schools. They spent the entire day doing classroom observations, having conversations with our staff and students, and not just the students and staff that we gave to them. We couldn't just put on a dog and pony show. They were in that building asking every single one of them questions. And to get designated, there's 13 areas that we had to show proof of. Of those, 8 were executing, meaning every single student had had that experience and every single teacher was living up to those expectations. So they came in October, and not to spoil the surprise, you guys all know, we have been redesignated. They were very impressed with us. So the question becomes, how do we do that? How do we do that work and move that needle in a year? So honestly, it was a lot of hard work. This was a building that was built on collaboration, on engagement, and on ownership. Our students own this building. Our staff owns this building. They have a voice in everything we do, and we brought that back full force, and I'm so proud of the work of our staff and our students. I have one really special one right here, so I know he's been a big part of it. So our habits of mind throughout the classroom. So we built the awareness, but then we built the celebrations. Every other Friday, almost every other Friday, we have a celebration. We invite parents in. We invite staff and students. We have donuts. And we applaud the students who really exemplify our habits of mind. Our freshman bridge came back. We brought that program back. So in June, if you're coming to our school as eighth graders or outgoing eighth graders, you come and you spend a day getting to know what it means to be a STEM student. That is a state commitment that we have made to the STEM program. That is a requirement of part of being STEM. Really, again, it's an increase in our culture of student input and leadership. We have the highest, largest number of students in National Honor Society that we've ever had in our building. We started junior advisory, and that's growing like crazy. Those juniors go and work with our freshmen in our nucleus, which is our advisory, to teach them the habits of mind. We have kids going out to the elementary schools and doing STEM kits and doing tutoring. Our peer tutoring program has never been bigger. And really, we increased our teacher leadership. I said when I started this job, my 4 favorite words, and it's true, are, I have an idea. Because, man, so many great things come from that. And it also, when someone comes and says to you, I have an idea, it means they feel like they can make an impact in their building. It means they care. And our students and staff come to me all the time and say, I have an idea. Our teachers have truly led the STEM redesignation. When we see exemplars, they're doing the PD, they're doing the training, they're getting in each other's classrooms, they're collaborating like never before. Learning and teaching. Interdisciplinary is one of the hardest parts for high schools in STEM redesignation because every single teacher needs to be working with someone outside of their discipline on a robust lesson plan, pulling together standards from each of their disciplines. So our staff really committed to that. We have 100% of our staff doing interdisciplinary lessons. These are lessons that bring in real-world problems, real issues that are faced in career or in the content, and these kids have to wrestle with them because I always say, we don't live in a single content world. My job isn't an English portion, then a math portion, then a science portion, right? I live in a world where I'm solving problems across the board. STEM solutions, I'm super proud. Year one, it was just community members. We had 14 different community partners come in, present problems. Our kids worked for a semester and presented solutions back. This year, two of my staff members came to me and said, hey, we really want to do OSLN Design Challenge. And they did that. They created that with it was almost 90 kids who took part. Incredible things they were doing. They were working with NASA. We didn't say this, but Ethan and Tyler and Michael, who won first in the state against so many other high schools, they were approached at the design challenge that day by the professors, like astrophysicists and aerospace engineers, and they're going to visit OSU. They're getting recruited, to be honest with you, because they said to them, and I was standing there, this is what we want our grad students to be doing. You guys are being creative in a way I can't get my students to be. And so they're going to visit. It's incredibly just rewarding to watch those opportunities for our kids and to see our kids thinking in that way. We did have each of our disciplines look at the design cycle, the design process, and decide what does that look like for their content. Those are all over the walls now. So every teacher is committed to using design cycle and design thinking in their classroom. In Pathways to Success, we're expanding our internships. We had 104, our largest number this year. We need to grow our connections and our placements. We're working on that all the time, making those opportunities grow. We are strengthening our pathways. 4 years ago, only 50% of our students were pathway completers, meaning they had done four of the pathway courses. We are over 90% right now of them are pathway completers. They are engaging. Our CTSOs are larger than ever. So we're seeing kids really have more rich experience of our pathways. A few years ago, our automotive tech was small. We have wait lists now. We've grown. We had to add another teacher for our health pathway. I think in our first 9 years, we'd had, I think it was 15 STNAs. Last year alone, we had 16, and this year I'm on track to have 22 kids get their STNA. So we're watching the growth and that engagement and all of the STEM learning happen. But the question is, okay, that's really fun for them, but are you achieving? Are you still doing the academics? And we are. We're a 4.5-star school. You can see the number of valedictorians we have, the kids who are graduating with honors. We're above average on our state scores. Generally, we score very high. I would say, obviously, we're still working on some things. Our math department has taken a new approach to math that's task-based and critical thinking, and it's been a struggle at times, but I'll tell you, we test almost all of our algebra in the winter, and we had almost 82% last year. We're looking at, we haven't scrubbed all the numbers, but about a 5 to 6% increase in that, that rate, achievement data in algebra. Geometry, we will not find out until spring. That's when they test. So we're seeing that movement. So this isn't just a shtick. This isn't just like, oh, it's fun to learn and be hands-on and do design challenges. This truly is teaching kids the content as well. We're holding high standards for these kids. So what's next? We are excited to say our science team was inspired, and they are piloting with a small group of kids doing the statewide science fair. And next year, 3/4 of our sophomores will be doing the state science fair. And the year after, we're going to make it a building-wide. Every sophomore will participate in that because we want to see our kids be on the state level, compete with projects of their own interest, designing their own research, thinking like a scientist. We want that embedded throughout. Our biohumanities continues to grow, which is really cool. They have adjusted throughout the year, so every 9th grader gets science and English together. So that's going to continue as well. We're going to be, if you guys want to come on May 4th, come down to COSI. Our students decided they wanted to be at the biggest science fair in Ohio. So we're going to be down at COSI. Cade will be there. He has led our IT design. The kids design the projects. We're going to be down there all day showing off what we do. So we're really trying to expand. We're expanding our pathways. Next year, we have Intel Pathway. Worked with Columbus State, worked with High Point, and we developed a pathway with a 2-year certificate that a kid walks out and can get hired at Intel. Through Intel's, they told us what they wanted, and that got developed. So we really want to grow our OSLN. We were determined by our OSLN Design Challenge. We want to continue that. The Ohio STEM Learning Network has made us a mentor site, meaning when a school is looking to be STEM designated, they come and spend a day with us and learn from our teachers, learn from our staff and our students. So I do think we are also expanding, our work with elementary schools, doing STEM kits, going in. We have a larger number of kids who signed up next year to go in and do all of that work. And I'm also 4 through 6 grade STEM camps, working with the city and the county to create those at our school this year. So we're super excited. I'm working on that. We'll be announcing the dates really soon. So we are really, I always say, kids don't choose pathways, they don't choose careers they don't understand. So we're not just working to strengthen our building, but to extend the line downward so that kids have exposure to IT and engineering. Every kid sees doctors, they see nurses, they see teachers, but man, we want them to see the behind the scenes work and grow, again, a STEM experience in Marysville. So I'm really proud of our school. I'm really proud of the work that our staff is doing. I'm really proud of the experience that our students get. I don't think you get it many other places. We're not just a STEM school. I think we're one of the best STEM schools in Ohio. And I'm grateful to all of your support. I know I see you guys in the building, and it's always fun to talk to you and share what we're doing. And Diane, thank you for your support of our building. And guys, thank you for letting me share our process. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any comments or questions? I have a couple.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really like to see the STEM model and and also the Intel. I think that's fantastic. I was a big supporter of Intel. I was very surprised that Intel came to Ohio. I'm glad they did. The COSI, what was the date on that again?
May 4th, and we're there. Is it from 10 to 5? Yeah, it's 10 to 5. Sorry. Kate's like my right-hand man on this, so.
Okay. And to me, the best thing, and I've been pushing for this since I started at Marysville, is your science fair. I think that's fantastic. If I can somehow help you in any way, call me.
We need judges for the end of this year for our first pilot. I'll be calling.
Call.
Okay.
I'll be there.
Awesome.
May 4th is also prom, right?
Yeah, we're going to get tired.
I was just throwing that out there, that we have kids giving up their prom Saturday to engage, which I think is pretty remarkable as well.
The girls took their early shifts to make sure they could
of
get
course
their
they did.
As they should.
I just had a question primarily as a dad that has a 15-year-old that attends the STEM school.
Yeah.
And out of curiosity, your senior numbers male to female, is that similar in every class that goes through STEM, or is it, it doesn't surprise me with being a man and knowing how boys are, but I guess to see those numbers, I would hope that there's more females that want to attend STEM.
We are working on recruiting that. That is a part of actually our state commitment, is that we are, that's part of why we go and we do STEM, a pathway fair in seventh grade, and we're opening that up. But it has been pretty consistent. I wasn't there for a few years, but I would say it was consistent with when we opened the building to see those numbers. We do have, I haven't looked at our new numbers. We have about 180, which I think is like our largest class, freshman class yet. So I haven't looked at that breakdown. So now I'm kind of curious.
I believe when I was in education, I remember reading research and articles about the workforce and the STEM careers, the percentage of that was male versus female was also much higher. So that's why it doesn't surprise me, but it would be nice to see a trend where that female number grows.
Absolutely. It's why we're trying to have our girls even go out and present. When they do the pathway, we want them, the women in our IT and engineering pathway, presenting so these girls can see themselves in our building.
I was sitting here just thinking back to when we had an empty building and people in the community were, what are you going to do with this thing? And I know that that was an issue for our superintendent, and the straight A grant that you mentioned was, I think, in the neighborhood of $12 million that allowed us to take an old building and make it new again and make it purpose-driven. The space was designated for different types of activities and so forth. And we had what I thought was the most unique situation that can occur, and that is you can create a building culture from scratch. You know, most often you have, you know, the old way of doing things. You have a built-in culture, you have biases and so forth that are present. And we were able to start something from scratch and decide how we're going to think. And I know that that process, the first ideas probably are long gone, and better ideas are in place now, as typically happens as you go through this. But to see this at a 10-year stage and to know, you know, where we as a school district began with an empty building and where we are now with kids that are really being prepared for the future, and a future that is going to be incredible, is heartwarming to me. And I want to thank all the people that were involved in the origins of this idea and how it was all put together long years ago, because their efforts are now really paying off for the students today, and it will continue going on in the future. So thank you, because I know you were a big part of it all.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Anything else? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you guys. By the way, our current class is what, 56?
56% male, not class, our building. 56% male, 44% female.
So it is shifting just a little. So we'll take it.
See, that speech worked already.
Yeah.
Okay, and now we're up to superintendent's report.
All right. So I have a few things. Enrollment update. Current enrollment is at 5624, which is up 101 students from this time last year. When we're looking into, we're 7 weeks into kindergarten enrollment, we're running about 50 students lower than last year. So we're keeping an eye on where that is. Now, traditionally, there is an uptick after spring break, so we'll continue to monitor that. I wanted to give you a little bit of a highlight with open positions instead of a list like I normally give, because that list is getting a little long right now. Currently, we have one open administrator, which I hope we have your approval on here in a little bit. We have 20 open certified positions and 16 open classified positions. So a couple things to note. Four of those certified positions are new positions. So those are positions that are dictated by numbers. So we had to add intervention service at Bunzold, Edgewood, and Navin due to numbers coming in special ed. And we also had to add a section of fourth grade at Edgewood because they're over the 30 cap. So those are all dictated by our hiring parameters. We also have seven classified positions that are also considered new. So with those intervention specialists, there are classroom aides attached to those. And we've already talked about the registered behavioral technicians that we're adding. So all of those positions are posted. Principals are in the middle of hiring. Some of those are even on your agenda to be filled this evening. So they're being very aggressive. I know Lynette and a few principals are going to a recruitment fair in the next week, I think it is, so trying to be very proactive in that. Transportation Task Force. So Transportation Task Force has been meeting past couple months. They have come up with a bell schedule as a part of their work. Currently, I think I just approved today with Jonathan a communication to go out to families so all families can review that schedule and kind of the rationale behind that schedule and provide feedback. So they'll take that feedback then, and we'll hope to bring something forward to you in April, I would hope. At the latest, it would be May. Let's Talk Initiative, April 3rd at 5 o'clock here in this room. We're having your Bring a Friend event. So everyone that's been involved in the Let's Talk campaign thus far, we're asking them to bring a friend with them, and we will go through kind of that conversation about facts associated with our district. So those continue to get good feedback as we move forward with those. Also on Monday, we hosted our principal for the day. So we invite a community member, leader, different people in different organizations to shadow a principal, in essence for half day, it's not a full day, in the morning, and then they come over to this office and have lunch and talk about their experience. It's kind of funny, some of the comments from people included, like, well, when I was in school, you didn't want to hug your principal, and like the principal knew every one of our students' names. We couldn't believe the interaction and the relationship between principal and kids, and I thought that was pretty powerful. They also talked about just the challenges they could see with some of our students and navigating different situations. It was very real. We had a student, unfortunately, in crisis, but it was good. That's why we do it, so we can open our doors so people can really see how we operate every day. So lots of great feedback on that, and we'll continue. We do that annually, so we're picking that back up. I think post-COVID, we kind of didn't get back into the groove with that, so it'll be, you know, a staple moving forward. The last thing I would just do, tonight I had the benefit from sitting, which kind of seems odd, on the other side of the recognitions tonight. And while all of you saw like smiling faces and et cetera, I don't know if you noticed the number of groups that put their arms around each other as students and really welcomed one another in. And I thought, to me, it just was kind of this a moment of like, there's an opportunity for everyone here, and just reiterated the specialness and the friendships that emerge as a result of different activities and things that we offer for students. And just another one of those moments that reminded me how proud I am of our students and proud to be a Monarch. So just a different little view. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions, remarks? Mr. Johnson, you're up.
A few different items. First, I would note that we got our fiscal year 23 audit back, and we had another clean audit, not even any management, no report comments, and then sometimes there will be some more minor comments that they'll put in the management letter, but there were not even any management letter comments this audit, so that was great news. I've received a couple questions from people about the sports gambling article that was in the Columbus Dispatch maybe a week or two ago. It was written in a kind of confusing way that led people to think that school districts were getting millions of dollars of revenue from sports gambling, and that wasn't the case. What the article did was it combined the casino tax revenue with total state funding, which gave a much larger number than what we were actually getting. So Marysville Schools, for example, we received $374,000 of casino tax revenue this year, and we do appreciate that, but it's not nearly as large as the article made it appear to be, and that is the largest number that we've received since they began giving that revenue. It's mostly been, you know, steadily increasing. We did have a dip there around COVID, obviously. But just wanted to give that information. And then I had a couple handouts I wanted to go over. I put those on your table, and they're also on the back table if anybody wanted to grab one. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the collar document. This is a document that we've used in the past, so I've updated this with some new information. If you've been to our Let's Talk meetings, you've probably heard me talk about this already. But this is a very valuable article memo that just talks about some just different facts for the district. So I just wanted to highlight some of those. So what we do in the article, in this memo, I keep trying to call it an article, in this memo is we show all the school districts in Central Ohio. And we list the tax rates for each of those districts. So that's total tax rate, operating, PI, bond, as well as if those districts have an income tax. So when you list all those out and do the calculation, Marysville Schools has the second lowest tax rate in all of Central Ohio. And I would note, because a question I get asked a lot, well, if you pass a 5.5 mil levy, you know, where would we rank then? And so we would actually go from second lowest in Central Ohio to third lowest if we were to pass the levy. Further to the right, we also insert some other data in there, so some achievement and educational ratings from the state report card, which we fare pretty well compared to other districts in Central Ohio. I list the fiscal year 23 performance index score of 94.8, which again, that ranks us in the, let me see, I had that on the below, in the top 17% of all schools in the state of Ohio. And I also think it's worth pointing out that 94.8 is actually slightly above the district at the bottom, which is the highest tax rate in Central Ohio, has a 94. So, you know, you're getting a pretty good bang for your buck. And then finally, that last column there is the local tax effort. That's a number I've talked about a lot. Our 0.53 there ranks us in the 19th lowest local tax effort in the entire state of Ohio out of over 600 schools. And as I've said before, local tax effort is basically a measure of our taxpayers' ability to pay compared to the tax rate that they're actually paying. So basically shows they're getting a pretty good deal. And there's a lot of stories you can tell by looking at tax rate and comparing to other districts and that kind of thing. And I won't get too far into the weeds, but it is really interesting to look at. So you look at our local tax effort of 0.53. Then right under us there, you've got Groveport Madison, a tax effort of 1.03. So what the state says is a local tax effort of one means you're pretty much right where we would expect you to be. You can afford to pay a certain amount and you're paying a certain amount. And if those numbers are right in line with the expectation, then you're right at one. That would just be considered average. But what's interesting, if you look at Groveport Madison, they're having having that index of one compared to our lower tax index means typically what you're going to see is a lower state revenue for a district with a really low local tax effort. So our state revenue per pupil is about $4,900, whereas Groveport Madison's is $6,200. So as you would expect, that higher higher local tax effort means they get a higher amount of state funding. But I'm not, the other thing, when you, there's so many other variables to compare. So when you look at Groveport Madison, for example, their total state, their total revenue per pupil is $19,000, whereas ours is only 12. So very big difference in actual revenue. And then, so again, I just thought that was an interesting case. You could also look at Grandview Heights, which is one more down. They're at that 0.46. They're even slightly lower than us. And their state funding per pupil is well below ours. I think it's in the 2000s. So a lot of things to be gleaned from that information. Some of the notes below there, I already mentioned most of those are total revenue per pupil is $4,900 below the state average, while our expenditures per pupil is $2,400 below the state average. A new ranking that I added this year is information that comes from the Ohio Department of Education, looking at our teachers per pupil and administrators per pupil. Our teachers per pupil were ranked 48th in the state, which means that 92% of districts have more teachers per student than Marysville schools. And for the administrators, pretty similar, we're 97th in the state, meaning 84% of all districts have more administrators per pupil than Marysville schools. So yeah, that was all I wanted to highlight with that. Any questions on that? So then one last thing, there was also a question about millage and how do we calculate that? And we, as we had last time with our levy, we'll have a millage calculator on our website. But this document just kind of gives you a real simple breakdown of how it works. So with the first section there, basically we're assuming a home value of $100,000 because that's easy to calculate. You can, you know, do that. And then if you have a $300,000 home, just take that number times three. So first you look at the market value of your house. That, you know, that's what, you know, what you paid for your house or what your house is worth, basically. But you're not taxed based on your market value. You're taxed based on the assessed value.
To get the assessed value is very simple. You just take the market value times 35%. So 100,000 times 0.35 equals $35,000. So that is your assessed value of your home. So you have to take the assessed value times the millage to get the taxes that you would pay. So when it comes to millage, one mill is the same as 1/10 of a penny, or the same as 0.001. So if we look at 5.5 mils, that would be 0.0055. So you take the $35,000 assessed value times 0.0055, comes to $192.50 per year of taxes for a 5.5 mil levy. And like I said, you can below I showed that for a $300,000 house, so that gives you a number that's maybe more close to the average home value in Marysville. But again, you take that, the calculation for the $100,000, if you have a $600,000 home, just take that number times six to get your annual taxes. And that's all for me.
Okay, still digesting all that. Any questions? Everybody's still thinking about it also.
No, I really appreciate all the work you did in updating and adding some additional information on this sheet. And I know most people have a mortgage on their homes, or at least I assume that, as I do. And so I always have a tendency to take the annual, divide it by 12 to see what's this, you know, what's going to happen to me on a monthly basis. And $100,000 comes out to, I think it's $16.04 a month. And on a $300,000 house, it's $412.50 per month, or $48.12 a month on the on your mortgage payment. So hopefully people will understand what the financial impact will be on them.
I think something, two facts that kind of stick out to me is the student to teacher ratio and the student to administrator ratio. Something I kind of want to know, if tonight's not the time for this to answer, just in the future, what are the appropriate ratios for both teachers and administrators to provide the quality of education that our students require? That's something that I think would be nice to know, or if we have an answer tonight. I know that's kind of on the spot, but I'm very curious, so.
Okay. Board President's report. So there's been some talk in the community, even as late as today, where the city and the schools are meeting or what's happening there. And there's a lot goes on in that meeting that I can't really talk about, but I can tell you we're a lot closer than we were a year ago at this time. We're talking tax incentives and how they affect both the school and the city. I think we've come to a consensus there that they're going to give us a break. I think I can say that, for this go around. And so any levies that we pass currently would not be taxed at the new rate or TIFed at the new rate. So we're going to be short, just under $1 million savings by doing that. Is that correct? Like 900,000 or something to that tune. So that's a big concession on their part, but we're still continuing to hammer that out. Our next meeting's April 16th, and I know we went to every other month, and now we're back down to every month because it's kind of crunch time, work some of these things out. And I know Todd and Diane are meeting with the city continuously on a weekly basis to iron some of these things out. So it is nice to know that we're moving forward on that. And then, as Kenny Chafin, reported tonight. It was very nice to see our kids out at the tornado site in Union County. The family that was impacted had three generations of FFA officers. The current one just graduated last year, and you know, it just devastated their farm, nothing left of it. And I looked out across the field on Friday morning, and I thought it'll be months before we get that field cleaned up. It's over probably 500 acres, scattered debris. There was one, two, three, four buildings, large buildings, just blown across the field and in power lines and in the trees. Our students didn't take the ones out of the power lines. I pointed that out to them, but no takers on that. But I'll tell you, they came out there, they went to work. I was not out there with them, my wife was, and I know Kenny was out there with them, and they cleaned that field up in 3 hours. So when I got there, you know, Sunday morning, I thought, man, they're gonna make a little dent here today, and they just cleaned it up. And there were another four schools besides Marysville that came out FFA-wise, and FFA alumni chapters came out and had all kinds of food, way too much food. So anyway, really appreciate that. Then Jermaine got me involved in a little committee meeting of concerned taxpayers, and we would like to kind of invite you, if you think that anything you're hearing, you know, is, I don't know, adversarial toward the schools, that you get a hold of one of the board members or call the administrative offices and find out the facts. Because the one thing I can guarantee you is social media does not have it. I just, every night I look at that and just cringe at the statements being made, and people don't have a clue what they're saying. So please get a hold of us, and I don't care which one of us. And then let's see. Oh, the board got some invites to set up building visits. Please don't wait for my signature. I have decided I will fill in wherever you guys don't want, because I'm wide open on that. So please fill in and go see the buildings. I don't think we're setting it up as you to go see all of them, but the ones you want to see, make sure you get out there and see them. And that way we impact the education that's going on the least amount that we can. So on that, I think that's it for tonight. So the next thing is student achievement report. Do we have one?
As I shared via email today, no pertinent information to share at this time.
Okay, all right. Makes it easy. Legislative report.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. So I did email the legislative report out maybe while I was supposed to be here. there is a legislative report. I'm going to, first, the primary election did occur last Tuesday. Representative Richardson secured the Republican primary, and Bill Reneke was uncontested. So there's still a general election, but we'll most likely see both those two legislators for the next General Assembly. There's nothing to report from the federal level, nothing to really significantly highlight. The last time I talked about the capital budget bill, and there is $600 million into the allocated for the Ohio Facilities Construction Commission for the use of school building improvements. And the Senate has included it in its version of the capital bill, which is great news, but they still, the Senate and the House have various different versions of this capital budget bill and approaches, so that still has to get hashed out. What I do want to really focus on tonight is back to the Joint Committee on Property Tax Review and Reform. We discussed two hearings last time, but on the February 28th was a very interesting hearing. If you enjoy listening to the Ohio Channel like I do, I encourage you to actually listen to the live. It's about 2 hours, because some of the stuff that you can see on the written testimony I've provided or in my report, there's things I can't really communicate in a written report that you can maybe listen to and have a greater understanding. So first, there was the Eric from the National Conference of State Legislators, really just highlighting just general property tax usage from a national standpoint and how it or pertains to Ohio. And I think something that was interesting I just want to highlight is in 2023, 14 states enacted some type of property tax relief bills, legislation. So that one of the people said that property tax is the most hated tax in the world. And there's probably a reason for that. But seeing that there's 14 states enacting some kind of property tax relief also shows some maybe there's an issue with, I think it's the evaluation system. In Ohio, when one of the things that they were recommending is for it to be done more regularly instead of a 6 or a 3 year term where you then have to catch up all of the increase in value. If you do it on an annual or a semi-annual basis, you're keeping it on track. You're not going to overpay or underpay on your property tax because it's being managed a little bit more efficiently. Again, I comment anything. Our Representative Richardson, who represents this district, is on this panel. So some questions that she was asking with this panelist is how do you calculate the average cost of educating a student? And the panelist said it's labor-driven sector, so it depends on what you pay your teachers and administrators and what's the appropriate staffing levels for that. And then she also asked about this: what's the state's pay per pupil versus local share? The panelists didn't have an answer for that for our state or from a national state. Like she was trying to identify what's a good balance between the state and the local. This person did not have that answer readily available, but he's going to look in and follow up. Now, the testimony that's really very interesting was Thomas Zano. He's a former Ohio tax commissioner, and he's previously served in the, I believe that he's served in the state legislature before. He referenced, 2003, there was a committee. They produced a bipartisan committee to study state and local taxes. They issued a report, had about 39 options to address the tax system, which one of those options included to have a committee really study the property tax, and we just now got there to that point. But other objectives have been accomplished since then. Some things that he really identified, he advocates for the to eliminate the difference in property taxation of public utilities compared to other companies. For instance, pipeline property is taxed at 88% of fair market value. Electric transmission distribution is taxed at 85%. Your home is taxed at 35%. So he's saying that's unfair in competitiveness. Let me start over a little bit. Some things that he's saying that our tax system should have is five elements for a quality tax system is simplicity, which obviously Todd's report really hit. We're there. With how we evaluate, for school levies, simplicity, equity, stability, neutrality, and competitiveness. So that's kind of what he's setting his recommendations around in his presentation. Then he went on to talk about HB 920 is broken, but we may agree, but there's his perspective, and I'll share that. So this is just me reporting out, not giving my personal opinion here. He believes that school districts are connecting their own form of tax planning to circumvent 920 protections. And again, House Bill 920 is set so that whatever the voted millage is what you're taxed at. So if when your evaluations go up, there wasn't 920, you would be paying more in taxes over the course of a levy, but you didn't vote on that. So that's why 920 was put in place. But he says that school districts are incentivized to enact emergency, substitute, and income tax levies because they are not included in the 20 mil floor. 70% of school districts 70% of school districts are closing in or at the 20 mil floor. of the 333 districts at the 20 mil floor, 79% have additional millage in place that's not subject to House Bill 920. He went over the timeline. 1976 is when House Bill 920 was enacted, the constitutional amendment to separate Class 1 from Class 2 to help implement House Bill 920 was passed in 1980. And then he kind of given a breakdown or a preview of emergency levies. And I think it's important that I'm going to discuss this because even last week I got a question, what's this emergency levy about? And so I think let's go through this timeline so we can understand, maybe this helps us communicate as well. So in 1971, emergency levies were enacted as fixed sum levies for two purposes. One, to provide emergency requirement of the school district, or two, to prevent the temporary or permanent closing of a school. And then in 1980, a second purpose kind of expanded option number two, and it read, for the purposes of avoiding an operating deficit. Well, Tom Zano says, well, isn't every levy for the purposes of avoiding an operating deficit? And so that's his comment there. 1983, the state legislator authorized the renewal of a single expiring emergency levy. So if you pass an emergency levy, then you can do a renewal at the end of that term or towards the end of it. In 1985, it excluded emergency levies from the calculation of the 20 mil floor. In 92, it allowed multiple emergency levies to be renewed as a single emergency levy. In 2008, it allowed one or more emergency levies to be converted into a substitute levy, which he says now that's another type of levy, which creates more confusion for voters. And also in 2008, it increased the maximum term from an emergency levy from 5 years to 10 years. Then he provided some data that shows he's saying school districts are using emergency levies. They're more routine, and they no longer indicate a true state of emergency as what that term means to most people when they hear it. So overall, some of his recommendations were to factor in emergency and substitute levies when determining the 20 mil floor, and also to factor in the income tax to prevent districts from generating inflationary growth, with the exception of the inside millage, which is for us is that 4.7 inside mills. Two, to clarify terminology and limit emergency levies to true emergencies. So kind of to limit the definition of what makes an emergency levy. Three, to smooth out the evaluation process by having more frequent reevaluations. Four, to address equity and neutrality for older or low income Ohioans. Those can be done by two ways, either your Homestead Exemption Act or what they also call a circuit breaker, which means if it's kind of a circuit breaker is not in Ohio, but it's almost if you qualify by income or there's other methods as letting you kind of not pay the bill and have it as a lien, then when you're ready to sell, the taxpayers are the first people to receive whatever you owe on that. So there's a couple different versions of the circuit breaker, but that's one of his recommendations, is not necessarily picking one or the other, just saying we have to address that for older or low income Ohioans. And then the last recommendation, to make public utilities tax more competitive. Throughout the Q&A, conversations can kind of go off the actual testimony that was presented, and there are a lot of representatives talking about school funding in these conversations and that balance between local and state share. Representative Richardson did make a comment because someone mentioned more housing helps lower your tax bill, but she said housing brings more children and increases the demand on schools. That's just a comment. And then she was wondering, because in 2022, there are about 192 emergency levies, and she was wondering why, when there's federal COVID dollars hitting school districts, why there's so many emergency levies. He didn't have the answer. He said they may have been renewing previous emergency levies, but he didn't have an actual answer for that. And then she also asked, what should the balance between state and local share be? So she's asked that a couple times in this thing, and I think that's just important for us to know what they're looking at from their perspective. And he says, hey, I defend taxpayers and I'm a tax guy. I'm not the appropriate person to answer that. That's kind of your guys's call. Representative Bride Sweeney is really, she's a, I forget which district she is, But she, every question she has is about school funding, and she said, and his, the way I'm reading this report, if you read the report in the way maybe I'm reporting it out, you think he's not a school guy. I don't think that came across. And she said, I love that you're not demonizing school districts, but your report lacks the answer to why. Why are school districts going about it so often? Why is the state legislature allowed this to happen, the structure to take place? And he said, you know, you're right. These are tools. The schools are just they're doing what's in their best interest, but the system incentivizes them to use these tools, these emergency and substitute. And at the end of the day, voters are confused, and it's not simplistic. You know, there should be just two levy options, and that's it. That's what he is saying. So, there's also another report by Fred Nicely, Council of State Taxation. I know. Property tax is a very interesting topic we all want to talk about all night, but I thought this was important maybe to kind of definitely take a listen to this if this is of your interest, because this committee is going to produce a report by December with recommendations that could be enacted in the next state budget, maybe not that quickly, but we have term limit legislature, so they're going to try to take action as quickly as they can while they have that time. So that's my report tonight.
No questions. Okay. Yeah. Good job. Good job.
One Thank last you. Note. I'm yeah. sorry. One last note. There is a state legislator conference coming up in April. If you guys want to attend, Dick said he is attending. I'm going to make visits. But I just need to know if you're attending. That way, we can have everyone on the meeting invites when those meetings are scheduled.
Cool. And do we have a report from the Safety and Drug Committee?
I think I took too much time tonight, so I'm going to bypass it.
Okay. And let's see here. We need a motion to approve the draft minutes from March 11th meeting.
So moved.
And second?
I'll second.
Been properly moved and seconded. Any discussion? Seeing none. How about a roll call here?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes. Okay. Then we need a motion to approve policies.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
Any discussion on that?
No, they're your second read, so.
Yeah. Okay, ready for a vote?
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes. Okay, and then that moves us down to, we need a resolution for roof repair and replacement. I think we've talked about that before, but recommend to approve the resolution for roof repair and replacement of Early College High School at by the contract of TIPS and entering into an agreement with Duralast Roofing Incorporated for the purpose of procuring and installing the roof materials.
So moved.
You don't want to repeat all that?
No.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Great, we have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion on that?
I would just note, because it was a good question, I think Mr. Keck asked, that part of the building was not touched when we did the Straight A project, when we had the state funding and opened the Early College High School. So that is an older section, and it hasn't been redone since around 2001, and then another part of it was 2003 or 4, I believe, so.
So that's 20 years, that's about it for a roof.
I just like to point out that this is permanent improvement money. It's not operating money. This is not a part of our budget that any levy request would provide funds for.
Any further discussion? Okay, can we have a vote on that?
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
I'm sorry, who was the second on that?
Matt. Mr. Keller.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
And Mr. Keck?
Yes. All right, and now we need a resolution, a recommendation to accept the bid for the heating and air conditioning mechanical for Creekview Chiller Labor. We've already had the resolution to purchase the equipment, and so this would be a motion for the labor to install it. So I need a motion.
So moved.
And a second.
I'll second.
Been properly moved and seconded. Any discussion on this project?
I just wanted to confirm the timeline for when this will be done over the summer.
That's the goal.
Okay.
And it did come way in.
That's the reason we did the parts so much earlier. It could, but right up to the start of school, and we realized that. But the goal is over the summer.
Okay. And if we get it done over the summer, it's going to save us quite a bit. So we don't have to have a rental chiller the way I read it. And also, just so everybody understands, it's about half of what we thought anticipated the labor would be for this. I know the bill's big, but it must be a big unit. Okay, do we have a motion on that?
Yes.
Okay, so we're through discussion. Ready for a vote.
Mr. Ferguson.
Yes.
Mr. Keller.
Yes.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Keck.
Yes. And let's see, we need a motion to approve all the treasure items listed above.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on those items?
Just a couple highlights. The cash flow is running pretty close. The big number that sticks out there is our real estate tax revenues, but that's just a matter of timing as we get our advances in. Either any time now, really, or beginning of April, we should receive our final settlement, and that'll show us where we really are compared to projections for real estate taxes. Appropriations, the only real big one in there is an increase in our SAC budget. That's a self-sustaining fund, so there's no tax dollars or general fund dollars involved there. And then also note that there's the approval of the copier contract on there with Gordon Flesh, and that is paid for out of our permanent improvement fund. And with that contract, we're gonna save, let's see, I had that in there. Thank you, about $172,000 over that 5-year contract compared to where we were with the last contract.
Any other discussion?
No, I just, there's some donations. I just want to say thank you to those.
Yes.
Those organizations that are supporting our students.
Okay, we're ready for a roll call on that.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes. And then we're down to Superintendent HR and volunteer items of business. Recommend to approve the human resources items to be included in the action items, Superintendent HR and volunteer items.
So moved.
Second.
I'll second.
Great.
All right, so a couple things I want to highlight. Obviously, you can see some of the new hires I was referring to. But also pretty significant retirements to highlight. Lynn Hamm, special education aide in the district for 25 years. Renee Tutak, fourth grade teacher at Edgewood for 18 years. And Annan, an intervention specialist at Navin for 23 years. And Janet Porter, who's been a physical education teacher in the district for 23 years. So certainly wish them all the best of luck. I actually think at least one might come back to join us in another capacity, so that's exciting. And I would mention we also have a recommendation for the new Navin Elementary principal on the agenda as well. I sent you an email kind of highlighting Katie's talents, and I would consider my conversation with her to be highlighted by the fact that she seems to be a fierce champion for students and focusing on student need and providing conditions to support all kids regardless of what they come into the building with to ensure their success. Katie is here with us this evening, so potentially pending your approval, maybe we could have her talk a little bit. So that's all I have.
Okay, we're ready for a vote then.
Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Mr. Keller.
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson.
Yes.
Mr. Keck.
Yes. And now we're down to approval of volunteers.
Do you mind if I invite Katie to say a couple words?
So yeah, Katie, please, I'm sorry.
obviously comes to us, I think I highlighted for you, from Groveport currently. And Groveport's home. I mean, she's a product of Groveport Schools, has bounced around a little bit and made it her home as administrator. So I always think it's pretty interesting when someone, you know, takes a leap of faith into another direction. So certainly welcome, Katie, and I'll let you, if you want to say a couple words.
Thank you. I am very excited to have the privilege and honor to join the Marysville community and the Navin community. It was not easy. Groveport has been home K-12 and then for the past 13 years of my education career. But really, truly jumping into education started. I tell this story often because it's really where I first wanted to become a teacher and have an impact on children. I was a first grade student, probably a little precocious and ornery, and I'm not quite sure the teacher knew what to do with me. Pass out some extra worksheets. I don't know if any of you were maybe those precocious kids too. My teacher, Mrs. Beening, sat me next to a student and said, "I need you to help him." And I thought, me? I'm not a teacher, I'm just a kid. And I didn't quite know how I could help this student. He wrote with his left hand, I wrote with my right, and I wasn't sure what to do. I was just a kid, but I knew I could be a friend. And back then I thought, somebody needs to help him. Somebody needs to help him. Our teachers need to help, our kids need to help each other. And so I really had that calling from that point on, and my capacity and my interest in helping all children, regardless of where they come from and what they bring to the table, as you said, Diane, has really just blossomed and grown since then. I went to Capital University in Columbus to stay home and help take care of my family. Ventured down to southeastern Ohio for 2 years in a very rural district where my first year I had 26 students, but I was the only third grade teacher. And the next year I had just 9, my little family. Came back to Groveport, Madison, and spent the past 13 years really growing and learning, and I am a lifelong learner, and I'm excited to bring those experiences and the challenges that I've faced and grown from, and those mastery moments that we all look for and refer back to as I take this step and encounter new challenges moving to a new place. I have my boyfriend here, Josh Hunt, and he's part of the reason why I was interested in moving to this area, but he's not it. Diane, you talked about hope, and I've really been thinking about hope as I have been working with our students the past few weeks. And I sat in an IEP meeting with a family today. Our child has autism. I don't know what that experience is like, but I work with enough families to know that those meetings can talk a lot about what a student cannot do yet, and they can be kind of defeating. And some of these parents are wondering, what does the future look like? What does 20 years from now look like? And we talked about hope today, Diane. We talked about the hope that we have for this student and all that they're going to be able to do. And to see that that's already alive and well in Marysville is really inspiring. You talk a lot about your budget. Finances are important. I mentioned, and I think pretty much every interview, just how lean the district is. I come from Groveport. You mentioned Groveport on the list.
you're doing things that seemingly on paper may be impossible. Your kids are growing. How inspiring to see what they're doing at the early college high school and the results that you're getting from what you're doing. You can't be that lean forever and have those results forever, and so I want to help in any way I can, but I think it's pretty inspiring just the commitment to growing kids, to educating kids, to producing them in our communities to be able to serve in whatever capacity and whatever industry. You've got a lot of different pathways. So there's a lot of hope and a lot of challenge in Marysville. And I love a good fight and I love a good challenge. So thank you for the opportunity to join your community and to lead Navin.
Thank you. And what was that school down south that you went to?
Fort Fry Local Schools near Marietta.
Marietta. Yeah. Cool.
Teeny tiny.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
All right. And did we approve the volunteers with that last motion? Good. Okay. Let's see. That's it. Other superintendent items. We need to have a motion to approve those. Those are mainly overnight trips. Not funded by the school, by the way.
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Been properly moved and seconded to approve these trips and other business. I think there's a resolution in there for the Ohio School Athletic Association also, which is just kind of standard operating procedure for us each year. And some renewals of some facility agreements with churches, and I don't know if there who else is in that. The Japanese school is in there. So, any discussion on that?
I always like to see our kids travel and have opportunities outside school. I think it's a tremendous opportunity to learn. I can see that we've got Washington leadership, we've got national conventions, we're gonna go to Florida to Disney, robotics competition. You know, those are experiences that kids are gonna remember, and it's part of the growing that every kid needs to do, and I like for that to happen within our school district because I know that our teachers and administrators do a great job making sure these kids have a great time, that they learn, and that they are safe and get home on time. So, and I, one other comment, it's we have our facilities are available for rent, and we've got some organizations that think our buildings are in good shape and are attractive and fit their needs and so forth. So it's nice to see that they want to come back and utilize our facilities for their purposes.
And I thought that was a France trip on there, but I...
Yes.
And is it too late to sign up for that? it's only a couple days away, isn't it?
Yeah, it might be a little late.
I figured. Any further discussion? Ready for a vote on that?
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Mr. Keck?
Yes. And now we're to my favorite part, comments and questions from board members. So we'll start with Mr. Smith, as always.
A couple of things. At Mill Valley, one of the things that jumped out at me was something that we talked about at our last meeting, were the career kits from Ohio High Point. And they mentioned that Amy Wagner was there, made a presentation to the staff, and the staff was enthusiastic and began incorporating some of those kits into their instruction. At Navin, I thought that they've did something where they had a book reading of Wish Tree, and then they brought parents in, and they had a celebration and events and so forth that were around the reading of that book. And I thought that was a very, very creative idea. The last thing, or last two things, one was just being able to thank all the kids and parents for everything in terms of state qualifiers and the accomplishments the kids made. It's always good to see that. But I want to point out that we approved a couple of contracts tonight, and there's a lot of work that goes into doing the research in the background, the meetings that have to be held. We got some notes about the team that was put together on the copier, and you know, there's hours and hours and hours that are invested in that. And the funds allow us to maintain the appearance and the integrity of all of our school buildings through roof repair and all the other maintenance items that they get done during the year. And our community, I think, has a lot to be proud of, to be able to provide our students and staff well-maintained places to learn and to work. The bid sheets, trying to research all the qualification, work performance of the companies and so forth, we're getting work done for less than what the estimates were in a couple of cases, significantly less. And so I think this is a point of pride that we're working very hard, very diligently in everything we do to make sure that our taxpayers are getting the best possible services at a very competitive price. So I want to thank our administrators, our superintendent, treasurer, and everybody that they lead that gets involved in this, because it's not just one person, it's a team effort. So thank you very much.
Mr. Keller.
I wanted to first say publicly, with the 5.5 mil levy that we decided to put on November's ballot, if there's concerns, questions from the community, I just wanted to say publicly, feel free and reach out to me. If I don't know the answer, I will get you an answer. Our community deserves that. With the Transportation Task Force, I know they're looking at bell schedules. You know, if there's a time to flip the script, most schools do not really operate what on the educational research says what is best for kids. Maybe this is the time to consider something like that. The other thing I would say is I'm glad to hear we're going to get some parent feedback on those bell schedules, because right now it takes me an hour and 45 minutes in the morning and an hour and a half in the afternoon to transport my kids to and from school at three different levels. Now I have the flexibility, my wife and I, to do that, but not every parent has that. And then lastly, I say this with well intentions, and I feel like we need to do this. We've received emails, and I get a lot of comments about the pay to participate fees for the district. I will say, out of all the districts I've been a part of, which is five outside of Marysville, we have the highest pay to participate fees for sports. Yes, I know there's a cap on that for families, but could we possibly consider reducing that with the levy costs? I feel like that's if it passes, I feel like that's the right thing to do for our families and our kids. If we're asking for more tax dollars, could we possibly reduce the pay-to-participate rates? And if you want to know what some of the pay-to-participates are in the area and or similar schools, I have that information and can share it. And then lastly, just the change of seasons. It's nice to see different activities happening in all the schools, just being around them, drive-bys, the weather getting nicer, that's a good feeling. And I hope all of our students and staff have a safe spring break.
Jermaine.
Yeah, so it was nice to start off the meeting with a open room, or filled room filled with students and families, their parents. And it was nice to see everyone and celebrate their achievements. And that's what it's about. It's about providing opportunities for those kids and young adults in this room, and their parents still showing up and being involved as well. It's very nice to see. I was looking at some of our resignations, and I don't know everyone, and I have a limited, as a board member, I have a limited, you know, viewpoint here, but there's a couple I wanted to mention. Tony Given, you know, a few months ago, I mentioned there was a teacher who some of the Facebook forum said, you know, I would love to recommend Tony Given, you know, as a teacher of the year or something, you know, something along those lines to the district. How can I do it? I mentioned we should probably have something where people from the public can nominate someone from some of our awards here. You know, Tony Given was he was my youth leader when I was in high school. I went to Quake Youth Group, and him and his wife were phenomenal people. I never had him as a teacher, but one of the most likable and connecting people that I've met in my life. And he invested in me as when I was in high school during some really challenging years of my life. And I'm happy for the opportunities that he has, and I'm also sad. Cody McCain, you know, few months ago we had transportation issues, and a teacher, he was the teacher who was taking and jumping on routes and transporting our students on top and then going into the classroom and teaching. You know, phenomenal guy. And the FFA is a top tier national program, and he's involved in that. I don't know where he's going, but I just want to thank him personally. And then I don't really know Erin Morrison, but I do know I need to get her book, The Hardest Working Letter, The Many Jobs of Silent E. She produced that last fall, or it's on Amazon. And so congratulations for that, and also wishing, those are just some I want to highlight, but you know, these are, every staff member is a person with a unique story, and just as I connected with some of them, our students connect with them every day. And so just want to show appreciation to them. I guess I'll just end that with happy spring break. I know some of us need it. Some of our kids probably need it too, and our teachers and staff. So please enjoy the time. If you're in athletics, you're probably not, or a club, you're probably not doing much of a spring break, but still enjoy the break. That's all I have. Good night.
Do you have anything? Either.
Sorry, one ending. I do want to thank Richie Roush for inviting us. It was good to kind of go into someone's home. I've always said that when people come to our community coffees. I know Dick and I had a community coffee here at the board meeting on Sunday, but the invitation is, you know, people always want to know how to connect, how to get information, and I always tell people, we'll come to you. Like, if you organize something in your community, in your neighborhood, you know, cook dinner or something, we'll come to you, and we'll be there to answer questions no matter what side of we serve you. And so I just want to thank him for and also Bill for coming and showing up. There was a tornado sirens as we were meeting, but we all made it safely home. And for the families that were impacted in our district, I do want to just say our prayers and thoughts are with you, and hopefully our actions follow up on my end as well. So thank you.
And the only thing I wanted to say tonight, and Jermaine stole a lot of my thunder, but that's okay. You know, you look at, there weren't 300 people here, but there are 300 award recipients that made it to the state finals, which is phenomenal, and it really doesn't matter. I probably shouldn't say that. Where you place in the state, because the education that you receive getting there is what is important. And, sorry, and some of those kids are also placing at the national level. We didn't single those out very much, but you also saw a great mix of both academic and sports, not just athletics. A lot of times these things are limited to athletics, but we're, you know, and one of the things that I've always been proud of is that I don't care where you go in Ohio, and really in the nation, our school district is recognized. You tell people where you're from, they've heard of us in a positive manner, and I think that's phenomenal. And I think when people think about the fact that we're asking for money, you know, they need to think about all those quality programs, because you know, the amount of money received is going down, the expense is going up, And we cannot continue to maintain that level forever. We're asking teachers to put in a tremendous amount of time above and beyond, you know, what's required of their contract to get these kids to those levels. And it takes the support of the parents and the teachers. And obviously, the kids have got to buy into it and work hard to get there. So it was nice to see that tonight. And that's all I have. And I need a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Wow, we got changed it up a little bit there. Good. That requires no discussion. All those in favor?
I have a comment.
Sorry.
I'm just kidding.
You can't do it. Legally, can't do it.
Mr. Keller? Mr. Ferguson?
Yes.
Mr. Smith?
Yes.
Mr. Keller?
Yes.
Yes. And that's a wrap.